podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Jones! Bowden!
He's got it! England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins!
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match!
Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Analyst Inside Cricket podcast with me, Simon Hughes, and today a special guest, a former captain of mine, actually, occasionally an opponent as well, but a captain of Durham when Durham were made into a first-class county. And also he's done chairmanship of the England selection panel, and now he's president of the Professional Cricketers Trust, and it's that we're going to talk a little bit about today. It is, of course, David Graveney, the nephew of the great Tom Graveney, isn't that right?
That's correct, yeah, it's very good.
Sometimes people think you're the son of, but of course, that's not the case.
If I had a pound for everybody who called me, how's your father, Tom, I'd be quite wealthy, really. So.
Yes, absolutely. It's appropriate that we're talking today because there is a needle match going on at Lord's. It's Middlesex against Gloucestershire, which, of course, we featured in on opposite sides a number of times. And it used to be a bit of a sort of bounce award, didn't it?
Yeah. It's I can remember an occasion at Uxbridge, Yozza, actually, where you also got runs and you also instructing the late Neil Williams to keep trying to hit me on the head. So I remember that match vividly.
Why did you always attract so many bouncers?
Probably because they caused six studs coming down the middle of the wicket as an issue.
So, well, you like the front foot then, you mean? Yeah.
Well, it's always been an issue for me that the fast bowlers have their own union where they pitch it up to each other. But any spinner who comes in from eight down gets absolutely peppered, which I had a slight issue with.
And you had no means of retaliation, but didn't you have some kind of convenient arrangement with one pace bowler?
I did, actually. Malcolm Marshall, the late Malcolm Marshall, who in my eyes is one of the greatest bowlers the game has ever seen. He and I came to some sort of agreement where he declined bowling bounces to me on the basis that he think he could get me out by pitching it up, which is probably right. And I wouldn't have a long off when I bowled, which I thought was a very, very good commercial operation.
And who came out the best out of those duels then?
I didn't get hit on the head, so that was quite good. But he did actually get some runs, either for Gloucester and against Somerset, because I played for them for 1 year. But I would have to say that I kept the deal a bit of a secret. So I don't want to be accused of compromising the results of the game.
Well, the secret's out now. I'm going to go digging for the scorecards of matches between Gloucestershire and Hampshire and see what you made and see what Malcolm made. Well, anyway, I mean, it was obviously a fun time we had on the county circuit, mostly apart from facing West Indies fast bowlers. But it, you know, there is a sort of more serious side that you're involved in now with the game, and that is as president of the Professional Cricketers Trust, which is a charity that we've been supporting a fair bit on our virtual cricket club, which you can join every week for an interview with a star player. Go to worldsbestcricketclub.com. We had Paul Collingwood on it last night. He was highly entertaining. We have, I think, Moen Ali next week. And we've tried to help the cause of the Professional Cricketers Trust because you as a charity are under massive strain with the pandemic and lack of events that raise vital funds, and also more and more demand from the players themselves as well, both current and former players. Just before we chat about your work and the work of the charity, we should just listen to a little bit of a video which was uploaded yesterday, which is the story of Alan Eagleston, the former Kent and England fast bowler, who was a tremendous servant to the game and played for 12 years in county cricket. And as I say, did some test match appearances for England as well, took nearly 700 wickets, was a fine bowler who hit a lot of us in the ribs from his 6'5" frame. But then in 1999, he was diagnosed with an inoperable brain tumour. and since then has also had two strokes as well. And so his life has been totally ravaged, as has his wife's as well, who's had to basically give up life and her job to look after Iggy, as he's known. So let's just hear a little clip from the video talking about his life now. And it's mostly hearing from his wife, Liz.
How many people did you play in front of? How many people did you play in front of?
Louisville.
Yeah.
17,000.
17. And then to not be able to, that arm that everyone cheered, that bowled, and now not to be able to raise it or use it to hold a drink, what does that do to your head? You don't know when this stuff's going to happen. None of this is lifestyle. He got a brain tumour, not because he drank or smoked or drove badly, or he got a brain tumour because he got dealt a rubbish hand. And then he had a stroke, and then he had another stroke. I mean, so it could happen to anybody. We just get help in a way that we couldn't have fathomed possible, because I've had to give up work to look after you, haven't I? We got the stair lift, because helping him upstairs physically on my own was physically tough. And if I wasn't feeling very good or very strong that day, then it meant Iggy couldn't leave his room. When everything's really hard, the Professional Cricketers Trust make everything bearable and better, and their support and sense of family and help just means we can carry on. We're really, really grateful everything, aren't we?
So, Grav, very sad and harrowing story, the life of Alan Eagleston post cricket. But what have the PCT done, the charity done to help him?
Well, the moment, Yoz, that we were aware of Iggy's unfortunate, sad circumstances, we made contact, and we've tried to sort of step up to the plate to make sure the family could be as comfortable as possible. So you quite rightly said that Liz had to give up her job to look after Iggy. So we've tried to support in that way. And most recently, and if people watch the video, you'll see that he's now got a stair lift, which I think it may seem only a small gesture in terms of the quality of life for them, that he can come from upstairs to downstairs and spend more time with the family. So I think that's been, but we are there for them all the time. And he is one of many cases. And you're right, it is harrowing. I must admit, the first time I watched the video, it was a really emotional experience for me, and I'm sure it is for many others. But I think the key thing is to, he's just recently retired when this happened. Of support are not just about retired players, they also are the current generation who are playing and their families. So we try and help as much as we can. However, as you highlighted before, is that our main source of income was events staged by the PCA. That is, as with lots of charities, under real pressure in terms of being able to support the people they want to support. So we are no different from that.
And just to recap a little bit about the Professional Cricketers Trust, it was actually created a few years ago out of the PCA Benevolent Fund. It's a very important charity that supports current and former cricketers, professional cricketers and their immediate families when they need it most. The average career in professional cricket comes to an end at the age of 26, which is one of the reasons why there's so much call on the charity. And here's some stats. Since 2015, the Players Charity has supported 426 individuals in the area of mental health alone. And during the first quarter of 2021, the charity has already supported 25 new cases and a total of 59 individuals currently receiving assistance, including 29 current players. So that is an amazing demand on the resource.
It's an amazing demand, but I think it's a fantastic reaction by the trust to be able to step up to provide that support, because it is probably wasn't an issue when we played or hadn't been identified. I'm sure the issue was there, but in modern times, there's been a lot more profile, which is quite right, and we've stepped up to it. But we are, as I said before, limited by the resources that we have, which is, you know, just a fact of life. We need everybody, the cricketing family, to, you know, appreciate our situation that we're in and understand how many people that we touch in different ways that makes life better.
Just explain a bit about the sorts of things that players need. You know, it might be a knee replacement, it might be something simpler, it might be something more serious.
Well, certainly the situation, and this is non-life-threatening. Iggy's situation is definitely a life-threatening scenario, which is just desperate for him and his family. A lot of cases revolve around replacements. And this is for a generation of players, Yossi, that didn't have medical cover, didn't have any pensions. You know, you and I know the stat relating to suicides in past generation is phenomenally high. And I don't think the sporting world realises that. So that generation weren't paid a lot of money. They were providing entertainment, membership of their respective clubs. And it's now they need our help because they don't have the financial resources. And again, the current situation is such, with the national health under so much pressure from obvious reasons, then to have a knee replacement through the national health may take years to take place. So to improve the quality of life of an individual, we'd like to be able to help them. That'd be one area. The other areas can be in terms of, sadly, when people pass away, the families of respective players are not in a position to have an appropriate funeral, so we help in that way. So that would be one thing. And also ongoing issues within a household, that you could have a situation where somebody is unable to move around. So the stair lift that we've talked about, chairs that would help a particular person. We've even had scooters that we've acquired to help people move around. So it can come in many, many ways. One of our most long-term patients is, again, a guy called Jamie Hood, who played for Yorkshire at the same time as Michael Vaughan started. He went to South Africa. Michael Vaughan's career is obviously known to everybody. Jamie Hood was involved in a car accident and is paralysed from the chest down. For all that period of time, which is a number of years, to help him have some sort of quality of life and be able to link up with former teammates. And an hour with Jamie Hood is life-changing for the people to speak to him, because his enthusiasm, optimism, which is the same that comes through the video with Iggy and Liz, you know, unbelievable fortitude, but optimism that I think puts all our lives in perspective, Yossi, without being too emotional about it.
Yeah, and of course, I've seen the video of Winston Davis as well, the former West Indies and Northampton Glamorgan fast bowler, who I think had an accident in a tree in the Caribbean when he was, I think, picking coconuts or something. I mean, literally, and a branch fell on his back and on the back of his neck, and he's been paralysed from the neck downwards ever since, and is in a wheelchair, and is incredibly grateful for all the support of the Professional Cricketers Trust, which, by the way, just to reiterate, our club on a Wednesday night, the video club, the virtual video club, with an interview with a player, is in aid of the Professional Cricketers Trust. You join for £6 a month, but the profits go to the PCT. And for that £6 a month, you get a live event each week. You can go to worldsbestcricketclub.com to join us. And we have really established quite a dynamic and enjoyable cricket community, conversation and events going on all the time. So please look at that website and try and sign up if you can, because it is a great cause.
Can I thank you and Simon Mann and those attached with the programme on behalf of the trustees, because whatever you're raising through your membership, and I'd like to play a part in helping that to grow, it makes a huge difference. So those contributing and making the programmes, thank you very much.
I think they're very grateful for the opportunity to give the money actually to this cause. I can't believe you're thanking a man who supports your rival Bristol team, Simon Mann.
Well, sometimes some things are more important than rivalry, but not many often. So I was going to say to him that if he gets in a situation, which he will do, to interview James Bracey, he comes from a family that are dedicated gas heads. And to, for your viewers to understand what gas head means, they support Bristol Rovers, and Simon Mann is a seriously diehard Bristol City fan. So in the period of time when he interviewed me as chairman selectors, that was always the first question, was about football. And Triscothic also is a diehard Bristol City fan.
What is it about cricket that causes these mental health problems more than, say, other sports? And as you mentioned, the suicides thing, which, I mean, I know is, you know, a very extreme example, but there have been over 100, and there is several books about it, most of them written by David Frith. So what is it about cricket that makes, causes such kind of extreme problems for players mentally?
I think it's something that has been recently identified. I do believe, Yos, that it occurs in other sports. I do think it's probably more prevalent when, and I know that cricket is a team game, but there are lots of times when players are on their own, when they've got time to think about their own situation. So I'm of the belief, maybe incorrectly, that actually individual sports, and cricket can be individual, is a situation, but I do believe it's prevalent across the game, but also more importantly, people who have recently retired, who find it, you know, you've been very proactive in your life in terms of moving the transition from playing to doing other things. A lot of players find that a very difficult journey to make. And that is an area where I know the Trust and the PCA in general are helping to make, and I was really keen on the education aspects of a player. My father, who was an ex-professional, not as famous as my uncle, always said to me, is there any chance of you getting a proper job for 23 years as a player? And I know he was half joking, but he did have a point. And I'm very conscious of the fact that to be able to transition from a sport that you and I love and millions of others do, to another profession is really, really critical and would help that scenario around mental health.
Yes. Okay. Well, that's a good point. Just to sort of on to current matters, Middlesex against Gloucestershire. I mean, Gloucestershire, top of their group in the county championship, playing really well. You must be proud of that.
Well, yeah. And it's nothing to do with me recently rejoining the committee either, Yos. So. Which has occurred. I think over a number of years, actually, under Richard Dawson's coaching and then now being passed on to Ian Harvey, Gloucestershire have been really permanent overachievers in light of the resources, the playing staff that they have. They've created a phenomenal team spirit. And, you know, I'm just really proud of the players more than anything else. And they have one thing that I never, well, I think I can remember it happening, but in one of the most recent victories, they managed to, we managed to win at Taunton for the first time in 28 years, which is a phenomenal sort of period of not to have a victory. I'm sure there might have been in other forms of the game, but in the Red Bull long game, that's an extraordinary length of time not to have a win.
Yeah, and yeah, it's interesting actually the strength of the cricket in the Southwest as well, with Somerset also having never won the championship but always being up there as contenders. I just find it quite interesting actually looking at the current Gloucestershire bowling attack at Lord's actually for the opening period of the first day. David Payne left arm over and Ryan Higgins, who of course was formerly at Middlesex. Both bowling, they're good, honest, you know, trundlers, both bowling around probably 75 to 80 miles an hour. I just think of the contrast when I went in as night watchman against Gloucestershire in the late 80s. I had hissing Sid Lawrence from one end and Courtney Walsh, who you mentioned earlier, from the other. And that was a real baptism of fire as a night watchman. Somehow I survived, only because I think they tried to kill me and just missed a few times, but never aimed at the stumps.
That wasn't an instruction from the the captain on the day, actually, because that was me. So, no, they were pretty scary opening partnership, I must admit. But that the game was a period of time when that everybody had quick bowlers. You know, Middlesex. You had Wayne Daniel playing. You had Williams, who was massively underrated as a seam bowler, together with Norman Cowan. So you had a half decent, a really good attack, together with the two best spinners in the country. It's no wonder you won so many times.
Yeah, that's right. I was the victim of being asked to bat at night watchman a lot of times, and there was a time I faced both Sid and Courtney at Lord's, survived the five overs, got into the dressing room, ready for the next day. And it was a beautiful morning, the next morning, and I knew that all I'd get for the first half hour was bouncers. So I went into the nets at Lord's, and Angus Fraser hurled me a few bouncers from 10 yards just to practice my ducking and weaving techniques. And then first ball of the morning, I'm back and across with every fielder sort of either slips or short legs or whatever, hardly anybody out. And I went right back and across, almost low, crouching for the expected bouncer from Sid bowling from the pavilion end, forgetting that, of course, he took quite a long time to loosen up in the morning. And the first ball of the morning, as he thundered down the hill from the pavilion end, was a sort of loopy half volley on leg stump. And I was so far back on my stumps that all I could do was sort of poke it to the one man out on the leg side at square leg, half volley, caught square leg, out for naught. It was a sad end.
Dangers of pre-selecting that, Yoz, which we tended to do where we batted.
Yes, that's right. Can you remember, though, Sid was quite, he did sort of take a bit of time to loosen up in the morning, didn't he, sometimes? He was a bit stiff for the first few overs.
Yeah, well, it wasn't a live frame like Courtney Walsh, but they just, once they started, they bowled forever. You know, Courtney Walsh would bowl in the first morning until 12:30. Wow. And then I might be able to get a couple of overs in, which a bit of light relief for everyone. And then he'd want the ball immediately after lunch. So both of them, as the bowlers you would have played with, were, you know, great team men. We were very happy to bowl all the overs. You know, they were good. They're doing really well. They got to the T20 finals last year. But they're not international names, you know. With the greatest respect to Ryan Higgins, Benny Howell, David Payne, you mentioned, Ian Cobain as a batsman, and James Bracey is getting some credit. But I would also plug in, which probably is the kiss of death for him. But I've always been impressed by Chris Dent, the captain. I think he's been a consistent scorer for a long period of time. And we always thought when we were playing Gloucestershire, when Mike Brearley was captain, I know it wasn't his situation, but that I can remember playing against Norman Featherstone, Yoz. I don't know whether that's before your era.
Briefly, I saw him.
He came out to bat Bristol with an England hat on, played with him in the towel. I said, "Why have you got that on?" And he said, "Well, everybody else in this team's got an England hat. I thought I'd wear one." That was not something that befell Gloucestershire players, let's put it like that.
Yeah. Well, listen, it's lovely to chat and hear about your work anyway. And just to reiterate again, you can go to support. There's lots of little campaigns going on, actually, with the PCA and the PCT. The 5K for Iggy is a little campaign to encourage people to run or walk or even swim 5 kilometres in aid of Alan Eggleston's cause generally. And if you go to the PCT website, pca.co.uk/trust, there's lots of information there, including the video of Iggy as well. You can support that and also support our club if you want. We'd love to have more members. You can go to worldsbestcricketclub.com, and we have Mo and Ali in the virtual cricket club next Wednesday at 7:30 p.m. You can join us, ask questions and have an evening of fun as well, as we had last Wednesday with Paul Collingwood.
Can I just leave you one thought, Yoza? All right. Is that if Iggy is prepared to do the 5K, then everybody who has an attachment with the game should be able to do the same thing. And it's only a fiver. Sorry about the plug.
That's a good note. It's a good plug. And we're all for you. So great. Let's try and encourage as many people to have a go at that as possible. And we'll be back with a look at the next round of county championship games on Sunday night stroke Monday morning, also featuring quite a long interview with Paul Collingwood as well. So hope you can join us then. Thanks for listening.
Podcast Network.